Hello everyone, welcome to China Money Podcast. I'm your host Nina Xiang. Our guest today is Jia Gong, a partner at Pantheon's Asia Investment Team. She spoke with me last week. We talked about new and important trends she sees in China's private equity and venture capital space, and also what the fund of funds manager looks for when considering backing investment vehicles in China. Here is our conversation. I hope you enjoy it.
Hi Jia, welcome.
Thank you, Nina.
So you have been in this industry for a long time, previously at Morgan Stanley Alternative Investments, and then you joined Pantheon in 2014. So what are some exciting new trends going on in China's PEVC space you're seeing, and also what kind of funds are you focused on nowadays to back?
Great question. The Chinese PE and VC landscape has been going through a very big change. We're seeing two very distinct trends, but this is really in the making for the last several years. The first trend is that specialization is definitely deepening. By that, what I mean is that we see generalists setting up sector teams to build verticals around the sectors that they're interested in, rather than dependent on reverse inquiry of deal flow. And those that are originally specialized in different industries are certainly building more of their internal resources to deepen their expertise. Because in today's competitive market, you need to have the sector knowledge and foresight, as well as resources that you can bring to the company to be proposing, you know, something to the entrepreneur and to the business founder that make yourself indispensable to them. So I would say that's the first trend. And the second trend is that we all know that in 2014 and 15 there is a great proliferation of VC managers. And you will see these days, they're, you know, rarely the case that companies, before they have profit break-even, has not been invested in by institutional investors, you know, by those VCs. But I think that, in a way, you know, puts the growth capital firms in a bit of a bind, because their operating space previously is wider. And we're seeing some of the growth capital firms leaning a bit forward in their investment stages.
And you mean earlier stage?
Moving a little earlier stage, i.e. they would go into companies that are pre-profit break-even, for example. And they, you know, I think ultimately for the growth capital companies, they need to recalibrate their strategy in terms of focusing on areas that are not very hot themes that the entire market is paying a lot of attention to. And they need to also think about what kind of risks as a growth capital manager they take or not take. So there's a lot of soul searching and rethinking of strategy that the growth capital companies are going through right now.
So do you see like there is a type of venture capitalization of Chinese private equity funds?
Well, growth venture capital itself is a term that describes investment into early stage companies. I think that term has extended somewhat because there is now a prolonged period of multiple rounds of private financing, and you know, in many cases, IPO happens at a later point of the company life cycle than before. But certainly, a large chunk of the PE activities falls out of VC. They don't take any technology risk. There's no business scale-up risk. You know, the classic buyouts of mature companies squarely are in the classic traditional PE set.
Well, at the same time, we also see that there are more buyout firms in China. Mm-hmm. So for your own portfolio construction, mm-hmm. which one, growth capital versus buyout, which one do you favor?
We actually construct a widely diversified portfolio of of GPs at different stages of the investment life cycle. So we look at a VC from early stage onwards, and we also look at growth capital as well as PE. And I think private equity, or the classic buyout that you refer to, is benefiting from a new wave of entrepreneurs looking for successions for their businesses, and also the realization that IPO isn't the only way for to materialize their dream, and they're more willing to cede control on their companies. So there are those two driving factors towards more control situations coming up. It's still not the mainstream by any stretch, but certainly more cases than before.
Now let's talk about vintages. 2015, that's the definitely the peak market for the mobile internet boom in China's VC space.
Yeah.
How do you feel this vintage funds, how they're going to perform in 10 years' time?
Well, I think with that vintage is really a confluence of several things. There's a huge wave of startups and entrepreneurial enthusiasm, if you will, and there's a lot of capital flowing into the startup phase, as well as many new venture firms, emerging managers that are focusing on venture. So generally speaking, you know, with a lot of capital going into a sector, it can create overhang, capital supply vis-a-vis the amount of opportunities. So that could overall depress the, you know, elevate the valuation level and increase the competitiveness of the deal dynamic. So it very much depends on which pockets of the general GP universe that people invest or not invest in 2015. I think 2015 will be remembered as a very, very busy, very hectic, and very buoyant vintage year.
It's an understatement.
And with the you know, with the subsequent return repression coming out of a generally elevated heated competition, but it doesn't mean that 2015 will not have very good funds. It depends very much on how disciplined the GP is in their fund sizes, in their investment pace in a hot year, as well as their, you know, general unique characteristics, what they offer to the entrepreneurs and what they, how they add value to the portfolio companies.
Right, so previously you said it's almost pointless to discuss the industry as a whole because, I mean, you as a fund of funds, your function is to select those funds that's, that are likely to outperform. So give us some example of characteristics that you look for in funds that would make you, you know, favorable for them.
Yeah, it's a very broad topic. I think it's meaningful to look at the entire industry so you have a sense of the temperature of the industry and you understand, you know, whether directionally it's a great time to buy assets or it's, you know, there's a lot of headwinds coming from competition and so forth. And at any given vintage year, it's never a very homogeneous picture. There are always pockets of the market that are overheated. At any given time, people feel very attracted and excited by certain concepts in those areas, especially low entry barrier areas, always end up drawing more capital than it can absorb. So we take an overall look at the a given market and understand what are the areas that are attracting a lot of that attention and try to assess the capital balance in terms of supply versus demand and make a call on, you know, the GPs who actually really understand, have some foresight and understand how this is likely to play out and use their own unique skills and their resources to navigate to deals that are not in the most hotly contested sub-areas. So it's really a match of background of the GP, what they're naturally good at, what are the differentiated resources that they can bring to the company, and then post-investment, what's their approach in adding value.
So lastly, exits. Mm-hmm. We know that trade sales have been taking a larger share of PEVC exits in China. How do you see the different exits routes, how important a role they're going to play in the future?
That's a very
general question.
I think, you know, exits-wise, you know, there are a lot of companies, companies whose previous aspiration is to go for an IPO. IPO is the crown jewel of an entrepreneur's career. And I think that concept has abated somewhat with volatility of the domestic market and also with the lengthened period an IPO process has become. But I think having said that, IPO will still be the goal of choice for many entrepreneurs and also many VC and PE investors. But having said that, I think it's important to be aware that the pocket of trade sale is deepening considerably. It used to be the MNCs who are the buyers of assets. It has now expanded to many domestic companies of many shades and colors. You know, the BATs, conglomerates, listed companies, they all have often a very voracious appetite for assets, for high-quality growth assets. And we're also seeing, you know, the participation of institutional investors for their long-term balance sheet capital investing. So in a nutshell, the trade buyer list is expanding. So that's certainly very good news for PE and VC investors. And also on the IPO side, while the volatility is always going to be there, it's always going to be fairly sentimental driven, the talk of Hong Kong Stock Exchange having potentially a third board, which is widely discussed in the media recently, could create another venue for quite a mature, respected exchange and also a new destination for technology companies. And I think over time, with the reforms of the domestic Chinese stock exchanges, we will also see that the IPO process becoming more regulated, more smooth, and the timeline becoming hopefully more predictable.
Well, okay, great. Thank you so much, Jay, for your time.
Thank you, Nina.